Wednesday, July 13th. Morning began by watching Jack Valenti on the Today Show. Very composed, articulate. We were proud of him. When he got to discussing what it was like to work for the president, his voice warmed up and his eyes lighted up, and I felt like saying, Jack, put on the brakes. But he was great. After these 2.5 years in the very eye of the hurricane, he's escaped to what looks like from here. Green pastures of private enterprise. I'd really worked this morning. What is it? Signing mail, autographing pictures to White House aides who are departing, the artists who have entertained us, the large dinner, the presidential scholars' buffet supper, a gracious letter, an autographed picture, and I hope a happy memory is what these highly talented, very expensive entertainers take away from an evening at the White House. Robin Duke called. Mm-hmm. It was a slightly strained, careful conversation on my part because of the press difficulties Linda Bird had had in Spain. But Robin spoke glowingly for the most part. How well informed this girl was. How she just amazed the guides and the officials by knowing so much about their country and wanting to know more. Sure. She's back in this country for Biddles to have his adenoids out. Lucy and Pat are going to get their license. A White House photographer went along. They stood in line just like everybody else and were not recognized at first. But it turned out that the White House photographer was not permitted to take a picture. However, his presence caused them to be recognized. Somewhere down the line, anesthesia is going to wear off and I'm going to realize that this is for real. At 1:30, I went with Lyndon to the Navy Yard for the commissioning ceremonies of the Oceanographer, the floating laboratory that's going to make a 6-month round-the-world tour in search of the secrets of the sea. In his speech, he invited 11 nations, including the Soviet Union, to have their scientists join in this round-the-world expedition. One of its main purposes is a search for marine food because of mounting population and mounting deficiency in proteins in many countries. Secretary of Commerce and Mary Connor were there. We talked about our speeches for beautification. We were piped aboard, the first time that's ever happened to me. It's a thrilling experience. There was an enormous, elaborate cake, pictured every detail of the ship, and in addition, had a little church on the side, the bridal party going into it. We rode back with Dr. Hornig. Lyndon always fills the car to the brim. All the officials related to any ceremony, a political expedition. I expect that mostly he's his own protocol officer on these things. I asked Dr. Hornig for one example of what the ship would do to produce concrete results. He told me of great schools of sardines that for years had run off a certain coast, and then one season they ceased to be there, and again, and it was a great loss to the fishing industry, and they did not know where they had gone. And research had discovered the currents of the ocean and the temperatures of the ocean had changed, and the sardines had found themselves another home in the deep, a few hundred miles away. I never cease to feel that I'm part of a new frontier here. There's so much happening that I want to see the results of. When we return, we walk right into John Connolly, Alfred, and Nancy Negley, in town for John's briefing at the State Department about Hemisphere, and also to publicize it to the Congress and the country. Alas, Senator Yarbrough has got his feelings hurt and has announced he will not come to the reception being given by John, the foreign ambassadors of the countries concerned, for the Texas delegation. He objects to John having the title and High Commissioner of the Fair. They're staying with us, and I'm absolutely shattered by the news. This trip to the 6 Latin American countries will begin on July the 24th and end about August 10th. We've gone through so much together. It will be sad not to have John and Nellie at the wedding. I spent the afternoon working with Ashton and Bess. And then, at 6:30, had a meeting with Bruce Thomas and Nash Castro, Joe Bruno, Liz, Mr. West, on the Truman balcony to discuss something that's very important to me, the tourists and this house. This house is many things: museum for the public, home for a family, site for official entertainment, and sometimes those things conflict. Due to the happy circumstance that Lyndon has gotten more legislation passed Congress than most former presidents, there have been more bill signings. That means a ceremony in the Rose Garden when weather permits, in the East Room when it's too cold or too hot. Then there is the influx of state visitors, the arrival ceremonies and luncheons, award ceremonies, the Medal of Honor winners, students, scientists. In 64, 1,800,000 people visited the White House. And in 65, because it was being closed more, 8 closings and hours cut short 12 times, was only 1,700,000. And many, many left disappointed. But it grows worse. In the first half of 66, it has already been closed 8 times, the hours shortened 10 times. And each time it is closed, in the summer vacation months, there are 6,000, 8,000, 10,000 people who go away disappointed. It wrenches me, and I am trying to get the cooperation of the appointments office of everybody to alleviate the situation. Marvin joined us and was very helpful in understanding that most beleaguered man. Nash suggested that on days when it was closed for state luncheon, tourists might at least walk in the driveway of the Pennsylvania Avenue entrance, and guides could produce a little story about the house, an excellent vantage point for taking pictures. And I, who am a chief culprit in having the house closed all day Friday and Saturday for Lucy's wedding, had the idea that we would open it on Monday. From 8 until 4, it is never open on Mondays, and this would be what Lucy would want. Very pertinently also, the book sales are falling, the guidebook. 20% of those who passed through 64 bought a guidebook, only 16% in 65, and now, the first 6 months of 66, it has dropped to 11%. That hits Mr. West and me, because we pay for these reproductions of rugs, these recoverings of all the furnishings on the third floor, these doing over of guest rooms, and the eventual great necessity for drapes in the state dining room from sales from the guidebook. The new book coming out in the fall, The Living White House, Liz suggests a fanfare of publicity. The meeting lasted an hour and a half, and then Marvin and I went over to the East Wing. I need to solve the problem of crowding in my social correspondence office. Beautification and its bulging mail can hardly continue to fit into the already crowded quarters of Christine and the six girls who handle the regular mail. To my amazement and gratification, found Sharon Francis hard at work at 8:20. Marvin and I explored, and I do think we will get one of the rooms for Sharon and one more secretary. Yeah. It's always a good feeling to lay your hand to the problems of the day, to think you've accomplished something or at least tried. To me, there's nothing more physically or mentally tiring than ignoring my work and letting it pile up. Back upstairs, I called Betty Weinheimer. This was the first day that the Birthplace House had been opened. It was an hilarious conversation. They had had 1,208 people representing 27 states and 3 foreign countries. It had all gone very smooth, Betty said. Her voice was full of excitement. She loved it. How glad I am that it's only going to be open for 1 month. It had been a good day. I'd especially enjoyed seeing Governor Jack Burns of Hawaii, one of our staunch friends. And then, about 9:30, John and Nancy and Alfred and the Christians turned from the party and joined me on the Truman balcony, my favorite view at the White House. Lyndon had taken some ambassadors, and also Prime Minister Holt, out for a stag dinner on the Sequoia. It was after 10 when I took John and Nancy and Alfred and the Christians into dinner. We were interrupted right in the middle by Lyndon and the Prime Minister, who is one of the most peppery characters I've met in my experience with chiefs of state. He told a delightful story about his travels without, as I remember, quite identifying the places and the speakers, but it seems that at his arrival at a point of entry, a state official had come forward to meet him with the greeting, "Welcome, Mr. Ambassador." At another time, just as his plane landed, a harried-looking official had come on, scanned the passengers in the plane, leaned over to him and said, "Can you help me? I'm supposed to meet the Prime Minister from Australia, and I don't know his name." Upon which Holt stuck out his hand and said, "Holt's the name." Such mild, deflating jokes on oneself always take the pompousness out of a situation and rather blunt the arrows of any members of the press or possible enemies in the audience, I think. After dinner, we joined Lyndon and Ambassador Holt downstairs and saw the old movie, early 1942, of Lyndon in Australia, and then our trip to Mexico. The more I see it, the more wonderful I think it is. Will there ever be such another? Finally, good night to our guests. Lyndon had a long talk in the bedroom with John. A bedroom is always a conference room with him. But it was 1 o'clock when he began his night reading, so I slipped quietly out. When I woke fitfully at 2:30, I saw the light still on under his door.